We are reconvening. Before we approach discussion agenda item D and the speakers, Judge Jarre has a matter.
Just very quickly, as a technical audio matter, we've had a lot of background noise, apparently some of which has been associated with the dragging of the microphones. In the February meeting, we'll have phone pads, which apparently have been used at the speaker's table to ameliorate that problem. But for the balance of this meeting and for the sake of the audience, if and as you are going to be addressing the council, lift, pull, drop.
Our exercise routine.
Thank you.
If I may, Chief, we've looked around the room. I think these are so sensitive that people are either kicking inadvertently the table underneath and kicking it up. Looked around, nobody's touching their mic. You can hear this background. In some ways, you're rattling or hitting the table or something.
Stop it.
No tapping your hand.
Thank you for saying what I was implying.
We're going to work these kinks out. We will. I have faith. So in item D, I'm going to turn it over to Justice Miller and invite our speakers up.
All right. For item B and D, we have two speakers. So if I could have Mr. Ariel Caron, please. And just to remind you, you each have 5 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good morning. My name is Ariel Taroni. I'm the new president of the California Federation of Interpreters. This will mark my 25th year serving the Los Angeles Superior Court. It's been my privilege to work for them, and it's an honor to be here in front of you. As you can see, I'm just starting, but I am very, very encouraged by the new relationship that seems to be developing. We were at a very meaningful meeting yesterday with the CIEP as part of the Language Access Plan in San Francisco. Of course, there's always issues and concerns that we have, but we're very, very encouraged by the exchange that it's developing. And I'm here as a friend to you, and I hope that you see me as a resource. And I'm part of this family, and I'm all for providing as much access, language access, to everybody who uses the court system. So thank you very much for taking the time to listen to me. It's a pleasure to see you.
Thank you.
The second speaker, Mr. Ignacio Hernandez.
Good morning. I'm Ignacio Hernandez, and I, too, am a friend, contrary to what some of my friends may want to say. I actually want to address two items in the time that I have, both the D and E. The first of which is item to provide, I believe it's $13 million for civil interpreters. And let me be clear, on behalf of CFI, I'm their legislative advocate, we have been pushing for this allocation of money of the carryover funds for a long time. And so we are actually encouraged by that. We think it is a good step forward. We think it should be approved today, move forward today. Will increase access. This is not the entire answer. We are not convinced that the only cases that can be provided civil interpreters are those where there is someone who has obtained a fee waiver. We think there are problems in obtaining fee waivers. We think fee waivers, we have to ensure that they are translated into proper language. We think that needs to be handled better and identified individuals who need interpreter services. And we also think that the money may not be expended in the first year, and our concern is that if it's not expended in the first year, that somehow this money will go away. And if we look at the track history of carryover money in the interpreter fund, that is what's happened in years past. So we want to ask that today's action item, when it is adopted, to make clear that the money is expended in an efficient manner. It's expended in a way in which the interpreters, California Federation of Interpreters, is involved in identifying how to expend the money, but also to collect data so that we know how many cases are being affected, how many more interpreters, how many more cases need to be addressed. We sponsored a bill this past year, which unfortunately the council opposed, but we included in there data collection. We included in there ways in which we can ensure the rolling out of interpreters throughout the state in civil cases. And we want to make sure that the action today is not deficient if it does not have these reporting requirements and opportunities for professionals to weigh in on how interpretive services are being provided. So let me just state that for the record, though we do see this as a step forward. In regards to the item related to sponsored legislation and the government code section, which is there is definitely overlap between these two items, let me say that we agree and we disagree. And our disagreement is not without significant impact on how this proposed bill goes forward. The proposal to change the government code section to clarify that interpreters can be provided in all civil cases, regardless of the income of parties, is problematic, potentially problematic. And that is the U.S. Department of Justice has already come out and made clear that there is no statutory impediment, and it's in their letter that's attached to the item, there's no statutory impediment to providing interpreters in civil cases. So while we support potentially clarifying or changing the government code section, we have to make clear it is only that. It is a technical fix. It is a clarification. It cannot be construed as an existing prohibition on providing interpreters in civil cases. Because if it is, and the legislature sees it as such, then two things will happen. One, they will tag a fiscal cost to the bill, well beyond the $50,000 threshold to place a bill on suspense in the Appropriations Committee. And there's a potential that the bill will not get out of the Appropriations Committee. And if that bill dies, and we have spun this bill as eliminating a prohibition, not only is it inconsistent with what the DOJ has argued, and probably inconsistent with federal law, but we now have set up ourselves for failure. Because if the bill is held in committee because of the millions of dollars attached to it, then what happens to those individuals who need interpreter services in civil cases? When we come back to you and say we need to provide interpreters in these cases, the council will be stuck to say, well, we sponsored a bill that said we can't unless this government code section is changed. And since the government code section was not changed, our hands are tied. I want to avoid that conclusion. I want to avoid that occurrence. So we urge you, and we think you have very strong legal footing to say that this government code section fix is important, but it is not because existing law prohibits interpreters in civil cases. It's because we want to clarify and ensure that no one looks at this government code section as being a prohibition. And let me state two other things. The USDOJ, again, look at the letter to the council. They articulate there's no statutory prohibition. It's simply what's in the budget language, and I've worked on that. There's no distinction between civil and criminal in the Budget Act that is adopted by the legislature and signed by the governor. So we can provide interpreters in civil cases, number one. Number two, there is a legal memo that the AOC has provided stating that the government code section fix is necessary and that somehow civil interpreters cannot be provided unless someone is indigent. That memo fails to reference the Federal Civil Rights Act, which is the legal basis for the DOJ coming in and saying that failure to provide interpreters in civil cases is a violation of the Federal Civil Rights Act and is discriminatory against individuals based on national origin. And it's very interesting. This is Martin Luther King Week, and we've heard a lot about his work. And of course, the Civil Rights Act byproduct, one of the byproducts of his life's work. So this branch has an opportunity to stand by the Federal Civil Rights Act, Title VI, and to say, yes, we're going to clarify government code section, but we know there is no prohibition on providing civil interpreters other than potentially the cost. But there's no statutory prohibition. So we, as California Federation of Interpreters, are in a difficult place. We support providing interpreters not based on income, but based on their language need. That is the basis for national origin discrimination. Right? There's two separate categories, based on economic status, based on national origin. So for the purposes of satisfying the needs under national origin, we have to be able to say This government code section fix goes forward, but it is not an existing prohibition. And if you can do that, we're more than likely going to be able to not only support the bill, but help it move through the legislature. We cannot take the chance that this bill dies with the understanding that its failure means that limited English proficient Californians will have to go another day, another month, another year without interpreters in civil cases. I know the protocol is to provide comments before the presentation, but I hope that members of the council will discuss the memo and the item and how this government code section is being framed, and will call us back up and ask us questions so that we can come back and have a discussion. Normally how the legislature proceeds, which is allowing public comment after the presentation. So I'm hoping that you will call us up, we can clarify this, and we can be unified in going forward and fixing the government code section without the risk that the legislature will defeat the bill, and in that we will lose our opportunity to comply with Federal Civil Rights Act. Thank you.
We'll invite Judge Stephen Austin, Chair of the Ad Hoc Joint Working Group, to address the court interpreter issues in Item D, and also Donna Hershkowitz.
Well, thanks for the opportunity to be here today to present the recommendations from the Ad Hoc Joint Working Group to address court interpreter issues. Last May, I was asked by Justice Miller and by Kurt Child to chair this group, and I was happy to see that the task was a different one from the tasks all of us have become all too familiar with over the last 5 years, figuring out ways to cut and downsize. This task involved figuring out ways to spend money, and spend money that for good programs that could change people's lives by giving access to courts, to the courts, to people who have been shut out just because they don't speak English very well. I remember thinking that the task was going to be fun. I mean, how hard could it be to figure out how to spend down the accumulated 45-45 fund surplus when the need for language access is so great in our state? Well, it turns out that it was much more difficult than anyone anticipated. In order to fully understand the recommendations that we came up with, I'm going to begin by going over our process and some of the hurdles that we faced along the way. The ad hoc group consisted of a broad group of members appointed from a large number of advisory committees to the council. It consisted of members of the Court Interpreters Advisory Committee, the Trial Court Presiding Judges Advisory Committee, the Court Executives Advisory Committee, the Access and Fairness Advisory Committee, Civil and Small Claims, Family and Juvenile, Probate and Mental Health, Self-Represented Litigant Task Force, and the Policy Coordination and Liaison Committee. In fact, I see many familiar faces from my ad hoc group just sitting out here before me today. As all of you know, the 4545 program is a dedicated funding source for all of the court interpreter services provided by the courts. Over the last 4 years, the legislature has allocated a consistent $92.7 million to the program, and it's been spent primarily on criminal cases and juvenile cases. During those same years, the program has generated a surplus each year. The amount of the surplus has varied from year to year, but until last year, it has averaged around $3 million, maybe a little bit more than that during that period of time. Last year, fiscal 2012-2013, the surplus went up to nearly $5 million. Interestingly, the reason it went up last year was a $1.5 million decrease in reimbursements to the trial courts for interpreter coordinators who were earlier, you were able to get reimbursements for that, but in that year, the legislature added a requirement to qualify for reimbursement. Coordinators must now be either a certified or registered interpreters, and there aren't very many of those. So that $1.5 million didn't get reimbursed this year to the courts. At the end of fiscal 2012-2013, the total accumulated surplus was approximately $12.9 million. The first order of business when we had our initial meeting last May was to figure out whether these accumulated surplus funds should be spent entirely on language access services or whether some or all of the funds should be allocated to the general budget hardships faced by the trial courts after years of cuts. Relatively quickly, our group unanimously came to the conclusion that all of the accumulated surplus funds should be used exclusively for increasing language access services, primarily in civil and family law cases. This is for a number of reasons. All of us agreed it was the right thing to do. And that was primary among all the other reasons that we came up with that recommendation. Also, it was consistent with the Chief's strong leadership in this area, in which he's made language access a top priority of our court system. It also kept us within the parameters of the 45-45 program as designed by the legislature. And when we reached that decision, we were just having our first meetings. It's about the time that the Department of Justice letter came out with recommendations, and it was consistent with their recommendations at the time. We next moved to a discussion of innovative pilot projects and flexible new programs that could be funded at the trial court level in civil, landlord-tenant, family law, guardianship, and probate. We were all set to head down that path when we received the opinion from OGC that is in your packet regarding the legal restrictions placed on the courts by Government Code Section 680.92. That law requires that litigants pay the cost of interpreter services in civil matters. This law had the effect of prohibiting many of the innovative ways we were considering for expanding language access services through the use of the accumulated surplus. Memo really just stopped us in our tracks just as we were getting going. The judges and the justice on our ad hoc group felt strongly that they could not in good conscience make any recommendations to the council that may violate existing state law. So we turned back to the OGC memo and began crafting the recommendations that you have before you today. All of us are comfortable that these new language services are permitted under existing state law, and we are excited about the difference these services will make in the lives of real people using the courts throughout our state. We started by addressing the elimination of the ongoing yearly surplus that now, in the last year, has reached nearly $5 million. Part of the ongoing surplus will be reduced in the current and future fiscal years, and this year, this fiscal year, and next fiscal year, going into the future, by increased expenses resulting from the new labor agreements that have been negotiated in Region 2 and 3. The Fiscal Service Office calculates that those agreements will result in an approximate $800,000 increase in spending from the 45-45 fund spread over the next two fiscal years, this year and next year. It's about 550 this year and 250 in the following fiscal year. More of the ongoing surplus will be eliminated by your action earlier this year to approve an allocation of $1.73 million for the Domestic Violence Family Law Interpreter Program and to shift the funding source for that program from the State Trial Court Improvement and Modernization Fund to the 45-45 appropriation. So those are new expenses that we're going to be dealing with out of 45-45 next year. That still won't be enough to completely eliminate the remaining ongoing surplus, though. To do that, we recommend that you approve lifting the $1.73 million cap on the Domestic Violence Family Law Interpreters Program. That program provides interpreters in domestic violence cases, ancillary family law proceedings when domestic violence is an issue in the case, and elder and dependent adult abuse cases. Although it is impossible to know the actual added cost that will result from this action, our best estimate based on total requests from courts for fiscal 2013-2014 is about $1.5 million. By lifting the cap, we should be able to spend our entire appropriation of the annual 45-45 funds while increasing needed services to vulnerable victims of domestic violence and abuse. There is an outside chance that this new expense could take us slightly over the $92.7 million 45-45 expenditure authority. So we have also recommended that if that happens, you allow these expenses to be reimbursed from the ongoing from the accumulated surplus. That's the $12.9 million accumulated surplus. Now that the ongoing surplus has been eliminated, we still need to address spending down the $12.9 million accumulated surplus. We recommend that you do that by reimbursement from 45-45 appropriation and from the accumulated surplus for expenditures for indigent parties in civil cases. Flexibility will be provided by allowing each court to determine how best to implement providing interpreters in civil matters based on varying court and community needs, resource limitations due to the availability of funds, the availability of interpreters, and other court operational needs. We have also recommended that if a court elects to implement in only some case types, suggested case types should include family law, civil harassment, unlawful detainer, probate conservatorship, and guardianship. The ad hoc group identified these as the areas of greatest need. According to the OGC opinion letter, these expenditures are not prohibited by Government Code Section 68092. They are also in line with the recommendations that have been made by the DOJ. When implemented, they will have profound effects on the lives and safety of countless people who speak limited or no English throughout the state. Now I'm going to turn it over to Donna, who will address the remaining recommendations, most of which involve the implementation of these changes.
Thank you very much, Judge Austin, Chief, Council members. One clarification very quickly on the two recommendations that Judge Austin just walked you through is that this would apply, if you adopt these recommendations, would apply to all expenditures in these categories throughout the current fiscal year, not just expenditures from the date of your decision forward. We just wanted the report silent on that fact, and we wanted to make sure that that was clear in the action. Most of the remainder of the recommendations do deal with sort of the more nitty-gritty implementation, as Judge Austin mentioned. The first of those would be that you direct that the administrative office of the courts provide guidance to the courts on what are the newly reimbursable expenditures, so there is clear understanding in the trial courts on the action of the council took and what types of services they can provide that they will be reimbursed for. This would be prepared by the Fiscal Services Office, and in fact they, in anticipation of a positive outcome today, have gone a long way toward completing a draft so that would be able to be delivered to the courts in fairly short order. Also, in order to help implement this, there's some questions, I think, from courts on how they, on whether they would have the ability to easily understand if somebody who is requesting interpreter services in a civil matter is indigent. And what we recommend is that you direct the Civil and Small Claims Advisory Committee to adopt a new form that would allow that would a new form for parties to request interpreters in civil matters. They would be indicating whether or not they had already qualified for a fee waiver or they were concurrently applying for a fee waiver with the submission of the form. This would allow courts to be able to track the information, could provide courts a useful tool in scheduling and setting up some operational procedures in order to calendar these cases as well. It would be a tool for courts to use. They certainly would not need to wait for the development of this form to begin providing interpreters in civil matters. We would be encouraged, in fact, absolutely not to wait for the development of this form, but it would be a useful tool. The working group had considered recommending that instead of creating a new form of civil and small claims advisory committee, that we amend the fee waiver form for additional costs. And we were counseled that that was an unwise choice. Really what we need is a form that is about a request for interpreters, that is not about fee waivers. And to the extent that the next item that is here after this has to do with, as you know, proposing legislation to be able to provide interpreters for all in all civil cases, regardless of income. This form could be used in those instances as well, whereas if we attach the request for an interpreter to a fee waiver form, then we would have to create a new form at that point, so this would actually address that as well. The ad hoc working group also wanted to recommend that you direct a staff from CJR to develop training resources as appropriate to assist courts in determining how the new form may be used to assist them in calendaring of cases and scheduling of interpreters. And also importantly, there was some concern that $12.9 million is, in all likelihood, not anywhere near enough to provide interpreters for civil cases in which the parties are interested. And if courts did not have confidence that the interpreters that they provided, they would receive reimbursement for that, maybe they would not engage additional interpreters. They would not be expending the resources because they don't have additional resources right now if they don't have a guarantee of non-union members. So recommendation six on the recommendation has you recommend that you direct the Tropical Budget Advisory Committee to come back to you in April, having performed a recommended allocation. How would that $12.9 million of the unused surplus be allocated amongst the courts? So courts can have some confidence that if I were to hire X number of new interpreters to provide these services, this amount will be reimbursed. A quick amendment to that recommendation, actually, if you take a look at it, it references that the allocation formula that the Tropical Budget Advisory Committee would develop would be identifying the amount eligible to receive it. Courts would be eligible to receive a reimbursement for the unused savings pursuant to recommendation number two above. It should actually be recommendations number one and two above, because as Judge Austin mentioned, there is a chance that that eliminating the cap for the domestic violence cases will require some of that funding, will exceed the $92 million appropriation, will require some funding to come from the surplus. And the final recommendation is consistent actually with what Mr. Hernandez was talking about, directing that trial court track the usage of interpreters in civil matters and responsive information to the administrative office of the court. This will help us in the future as we move forward and find and seek additional funding to provide these interpreters on an ongoing basis in these cases and in civil cases to all parties regardless of income. Without the data, it'll be harder for us to explain what the ultimate need is and the necessary funding.
Later in the agenda, you have an item having to do with allocations for the $1.73 million that has been allocated for the Domestic Violence Fund. If you agree with our recommendations and pass these, that cap is going to not be there anymore. So that allocation item is it's not going to be necessary that you handle that. So I've been asked to let everybody know that. It's a little complicated. It was put on just in case you don't approve this, and if you don't approve this, then you're going to have to figure out how to do the allocation of that money. But if you do approve this, then you don't have to figure it out because they're taking the cap on. Okay? Just want to make sure that was clear. It was a little inconsistent in the packet.
That's incentive, right?
I was putting that in as a sales pitch, so shorten your meeting. We also realize that this is just a temporary solution for our ongoing problem. All this money will be spent within the next couple of years. We know that when we spend all of the surplus funds, we won't be able to sustain this without more funding. But it's something we have to do. If we don't exhaust this surplus, our efforts to get more 4545 funding to expand language access in order to implement the language access plan, which is going to be in place by the end of this year. And so this will be beginning next year to get more funds in order to gradually implement the plan. It'll be much more difficult if we have a significant surplus remaining in the with the 4545 fund. Everyone will just point to the surplus to justify no new funding. Every judge in the state who has presided over civil, family, or probate cases has experienced that terrible feeling when we know that we cannot do what is right, what is just, what is required, because the parties before us cannot tell us their side of the case. This is the first step to address this issue and to begin this process of expanding access to our courts. Before I stop talking, I want to make special thank yous to Kurt Child, to Donna, and to Chad Finke, who's not with us here anymore, but he's still with our court system. They are amazing, talented people who each work long and hard to bring these recommendations together. We are lucky to have them working with us in our court system. Thanks.
Thank you, Judge Austin, and thank you, Donna. Justice Miller.
So I just have a couple of questions about the carryover. If the funds aren't completely spent, as it indicates in recommendation number six within 2014-2015, will the money carry over like it has been these last few years?
Will the fund carry over?
To that?
Well, what we wanted to do, because it was important for us to get that money out as soon as possible, is just say it's going to be spent by the end of that year. So we're trying to do that. There's a possibility that it won't all be spent by that time. It's going to take a while to get the program up and running. There's some inertia that it'll be at the court level. We anticipated that if that should happen, some small amount is still left, it would just get rolled over into the next year and used for the same purposes.
Justice Miller, if I may add, the council had taken action several years ago that that monies that were left over in Program 45-45 would remain monies that would be used for interpreters. Although the recommendations certainly anticipate that the funds would be exhausted by the end of 14-15, certainly some could be left over, and we would certainly anticipate that those would remain funds that would be able to be used for interpreters.
And then the second question is that the issue that was raised by Mr. Fernandez about reporting, that is taken care of in item number 7, correct? Right? You're going to track this and report that.
I think that's a very important aspect, because we're going to be able to have some record of and some data about how this money is spent, and some way to, for us to take to the legislature to show what the need is. And so we're hopeful that we're going to be able to have that information so that we go for the next fiscal year and start the implementation of the language access plan, we'll be able to secure additional funding. One thing that's nice, in a way, this is dedicated funding for interpreter services. It's not going to be in some other type of allocation. And it's pretty easy to point just to this. And it's something that I think is popular with the citizens of the state and also with the legislature as well.
We are also just beginning the 2015 language need and interpreter use study, that study the council does every 5 years. As part of that, we have asked the we've asked the vendor to work with us to begin assessing the need for interpreter use civil as well. We've identified a number of courts who will help us voluntarily track the individuals who come into the courtroom who need an interpreter in civil, so we have another methodology going at the same time to assist us in tracking the need in civil, so we'll ultimately be able to present that to the legislature.
And then lastly, I just want to personally commend Judge Austin and the ad hoc committee and their staff. We had a very short time frame in which we accomplished this. We did a great job at the conference, and you all can.
So moved, and I heard a second by Judge Bramlin, Judge Jacobson, Judge McCabe, and I think you'd like to be heard, Judge Peterson.
This is actually a friendly amendment. This first page includes an amendment.
To add 1 and 2.
That's
add
fine.
One.
That's to the form.
Matter
of 6.
That's fine.
Thank you. I don't hear any further discussion. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Approved. I also want to join in the recommendation. I know that for years, Access Fairness and the ad hoc have wanted to move affirmatively in this direction, and that this took a lot of work and a lot of discussion and sitting down at the table, and that this really is an unprecedented step in language access in the country. And I know CLAP, the California Language Access Plan Committee, is also working towards that. And so my words of gratitude toward the committees that came before all of us, that had the foresight to know this was coming and put in plan these studies about California and reporting, and then your good work in such a short period of time to make sure that those who need to understand our branch and in court have meaningful access. Thank you.
Thank you.